Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
Funding for Here and Now comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink technical computing software, accelerating the pace of discovery in engineering and science. Find over 200 job openings at mathworks.com.
Welcome back, and we're joined now by NPR's senior Washington editor, Ron Elving. Ron, welcome.
Hey, good to be with you, Robin.
We want to take a look at, first of all, some of the Supreme Court work that we were talking about today, but also look ahead at the week in Congress. So start with the court striking down Arizona's proof of citizen requirement to register to vote. How does this play out in Arizona, first of all?
First of all, we're going to hear from an awful lot of people who like it, who are immigrant rights advocates and voting rights advocates, and who are glad to see the federal preemption in terms of determining who is and isn't a citizen supported by the Supreme Court. And this was not a close call. It was 7-2. On the other hand, I think Governor Brewer and the Republican legislature will renew their efforts to restrict the possibility, or to ensure the integrity, if you will, of the election, restrict the possibility that people are voting who are not citizens, who are somehow misinformed about whether or not they could vote or somehow trying to get around the law. They're very concerned about this. They're going to have another swing at it. And, of course, Justice Scalia has made it clear that he sees a way that Arizona might lawfully and constitutionally add some requirements to the federal form if they went about it in a different way. What they struck down today is only one approach.
So we may see this again. But it also circles beautifully into what Congress is considering on the issue of immigration reform. And by the way, I said that the Supreme Court was considering the three big cases, gay marriage, the Voter Rights Act, and I said immigration. I, of course, meant affirmative action. It's Congress that's really looking hard at immigration and the overhaul bill that the Senate is debating. You know, Senator Marco Rubio of Florida, along with other Republican members of this Gang of Eight, have been working on this border security amendment to the bill to satisfy the needs of Republicans who want to see more security. Tell us where we are in that debate.
Something is going to probably need to be added to the Gang of Eight's deal to make at least some attempt to satisfy those who feel there isn't enough border security. Now, this is an endless argument. Are enough people being caught? Are enough people being dissuaded from crossing the border illegally? And the big question is going to be, who will certify that the border is secure before the path to citizenship can be opened under this legislation? Will it be the administration? Will it be Congress? Will it be some other third party? And to what degree does this facilitate the path to citizenship actually being effective? And to what degree does it really push off the path to citizenship into the distant and theoretical future? And certainly the opponents of this legislation, people who don't like it, people who don't want to see a path to citizenship included in the immigration rewrite, those people are going to say, let's really make sure that border is 100% secure and not one single person is getting across it illegally before we allow the path to citizenship. Something in the middle is going to have to be added to this bill before it gets the overwhelming vote it would need in the Senate to influence the House to follow suit.
But will whatever it is be too late for Marco Rubio, well known as a potential presidential candidate? And in an opinion piece for Politico today, conservative talk radio host Steve Dace said Senator Rubio shouldn't even bother coming to Iowa in 2016. He's in Iowa. He writes, sure, if you ask state party officials and some other big names, they'll say all the politically correct things about Rubio's chances publicly to preserve the process. Plus, Iowans are nice. But privately, he writes, I've heard Rubio is dead to me from plenty of conservatives. And it's in large part because of this immigration reform.
Yes, and I believe that Marco Rubio, although he rose as a Tea Party champion, is also being looked at seriously nationally because he is a champion for outreach to the Hispanic vote. And that is not necessarily the cause of every conservative, particularly not in Iowa. So we could see Marco Rubio's candidacy suffer in Iowa. We could see him decide to skip Iowa entirely, as other candidates have done in the past. John McCain pretty much did. You can walk away from Iowa and say, that's not crucial to my nomination, and still win the nomination. You can do poorly there, as, say, George H.W. Bush did in 1988, and still come back and win the nomination. But there is a point here that Mr. Dace is making, which needs to be taken seriously, and that is that Marco Rubio is risking his Tea Party credentials and his hard-right credentials, his conservative credentials, by being a friend, by being a pivotal senator to this immigration rewrite.
Yeah. What's at stake? That's the Republican side. What's at stake for the Obama administration?
The Obama administration has few opportunities to pass a landmark piece of legislation in this term as good as the one they have right now with this immigration bill. They've got a lot of Republicans on it. They should be able to get something out. It'll be tough in the House, but they can get it done. And if so, this will be, in a sense, the twin landmark to Obamacare.
Yeah. And before we let you go, let's ask about the G8 summit. Putting this sort of get smart episode that's unfolding aside, you know, everybody apparently bugging everybody else. Syria, certainly at the top of the agenda, serious issue. The U.S. saying it's going to increase the size and scope of its assistance to the Syrian rebels, actually talking about small arms. What can we expect out of this meeting?
Not too much. Don't expect there to be much more than a statement, and that statement will probably be a little on the mushy side. The United States will certainly try in backroom negotiations to get more commitments from some of the other G8 countries, and particularly to try to get the Russians to back off on their very strong support for President Assad. That's really been what's propping him up.
Yeah, but how much does Turkey complicate the issue now that the prime minister there is more preoccupied with protesters, and this was going to be the ally?
It would have been a wonderful bridge if Turkey could have stepped up and done more. But because Erdogan is under so much pressure himself, he really can't be taking any greater risks on behalf of the United States or the G8.
Yeah. And by the way, I made a silly joke about all the spying. We're going to take a look at where we are in spying now with a fellow with a wig in Russia and a leaker here, you know, based in Hong Kong, leaking information about the U.S. But how much do you think this will be a topic of conversation at the G8?
It will be a topic of conversation, both officially and, again, in those quieter conversations that go on between the leaders. They're concerned about the revelation that there's been a lot of hacking and leaking and surveillance at previous G8 meetings, and they're concerned about what they're learning about the United States. But in the long run, I don't think these leaders are too naive. They do know how much of this has been going on for quite some time.
Ron Elving, NPR senior Washington editor, speaking to us from the NPR studios in D.C. Ron, thank you.
Thank you, Robin.
Quick heads up, it was a terrible weekend of deadly violence in Chicago. Our co-host Jeremy Hobson will have a story for you won't want to miss tomorrow. But we'll be back with the latest news in 1 minute, here and now.